You are now listening to The Social Hour.
They're not PC, so if occasional foul language turns you off, then you have all been warned. This is the calm before the storm.
The only way we're signing this is if there's penetration. We don't care who or how. There has to be something's going into somewhere in this office.
Get ready for the social hour.
Live from Dice World Studios in San Antonio, Texas. This is the social hour. On today's show, astrocartographer Izzy Guadiara. And now your host. Now that not liking someone else's ideas is the new benchmark for murder, he thinks more of you should start running serpentine to your cars, Dees Casillas.
Malib Keen, everyone. Welcome to the show. This is the Social Hour. I am Dees. Thank you for coming around for another episode. We appreciate you being here. Thanks for hanging out, guys. For those of you who've been around, or those of you who haven't, news, we are now on the Roku channel every other Tuesday at 1 p.m. The Social Hour goes kind of live recorded, pre-recorded live. Isn't everything recorded live? What isn't recorded? This is recorded in the past when everyone was dead. It's all recorded. That's the dumbest thing. Anyway, it's a show I record and film, and then we put it on the Roku channel with the Madness Entertainment Network. So check it out. Lots of great shows on that network. I'm on that network. Audio, video. Go check it out and watch my show. And don't at me for the crazy shit I say. Go fuck yourself. I don't care. And also, I'm going to get this out of the way. Obviously, it's a crazy week this last week in the news with a wide variety of things, especially the assassination of Charlie Kirk. My heart goes out to his family, his wife and kids. I'm not going to get into this topic too much. Not at all today, actually. I just want to let you know I didn't forget about it. I'm not skipping over it. It is something we're going to talk about. It is something that's going to get a deeper discussion. We just already had this show booked, and I didn't want to bump it. So just know that I will get to it probably for next week's episode. You'll hear a lot more about my thoughts on that whole thing because it's interesting. A lot going on there. But moving on. Guys, as for me, go to deescomedy.com. Check out everything going on across the network. Live dates. If you're listening to this today, the day it comes out in audio format, September 17th, I will be at Bourbon and Branch in Spring Branch, Texas, slinging jokes tonight. Then you can catch me all weekend, 19th, 20th, and 21st at the Kings of Horror Convention at Wonderland Mall in San Antonio, Texas with Kill Stand number 1 and 2. Number 3 is oh so close to coming out, guys. We're going to have a big announcement soon for that. And then this Sunday, the 21st, I'll be at Upstage Comedy Lounge with the THC show returning. Come check that out. And then next Thursday, the 25th, I'll be headlining the Dallas Comedy Club. Looking forward to that, guys. That's a big show, and I am excited to be out there at that new club and get a chance to tickle some funny bones out there. So go to deescomedy.com for all things comedy. Go to inferno.earth for all things comic books and Kill Stan. And that's it, guys. We're going to get into it with our guest. It's going to be a hard cut into this interview because I had to re-record this intro because I fucked up the audio of it when I was recording it with my guests. So it's a hard cut into hard-hitting questions, and I'm going to, right before this happens, we figured out who actually committed 9/11, then we jumped into this conversation. So, sorry for who missed that. Guess you're going to have to hop on the audio, the video version that releases on the Roku channel to figure that out. So, guys, welcome to the show. Astrologist, astrocartographer, happy to have her, Izzy Guadiara. So what took you from New York to Madrid? What was the jump for?
Well, like, I don't know. I've always really liked, you know, exploring, and I've always really liked, like, foreign countries. And I was like, you know, I want to, like, while I'm young, while I can, I said I want to experience, like, living in a foreign country. And I had just finished my master's, and I was, like, working a lot in New York and, like, finishing up my master's. And I just was like, where do I want to go? Like, what country do I want to go? And astrocartography, which is what I practice, did help me choose my location, like kind of helped me finalize my decision. Mm-hmm. But I was looking for a country where I spoke the language.
Okay.
A country where it wasn't like super cold, and a country in Europe.
Okay.
And so the choices were basically Spain, Italy, or Ireland, because the UK like left the EU. So
right.
The Brexit thing. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, okay, Ireland has horrible weather. Italy, I feel like, you know, my parents are from there. I feel like I knew it really well already. And I was like, I just want to like discover Spain and, you know, improve my Spanish and meet people. And like, I had visited Spain a couple times and I really liked the vibe, and my astrocartography like showed me that energetically, like it would be like a pretty good country for me, not like perfect, but that it would be pretty good. And so I just went with it, and I didn't know that I would stay here this long, but like I met my fiance and we got engaged this summer, in the beginning of the summer. And so yeah, I'm here for the long haul, it looks like.
Nice. I mean, do you guys plan on staying there, or are you thinking about going somewhere else?
No, I mean, I think for now, like, definitely for like at least in the near future, we're gonna stay here. I mean, we've always talked about maybe like relocating to another part of Spain. Like, I really like the coast. But, you know, we built like a community in Madrid, and we've made a lot of friends here. And so, and it was already a lot for me to move to another country, especially during the pandemic, because you have to think like I moved in 2019, the beginning of 2020, COVID hit. And I felt like I had to adjust twice to the country.
Sure. Yeah.
When I first got here, like I made all my friends. And then when COVID hit, a lot of them left. And I wanted to stay. I wanted to stick it out. And so, yeah, like a lot of them left. And then I felt like I had to, like, once the lockdown ended, because we had a very strict lockdown in Europe, in Spain, mm-hmm. in most of Europe, we weren't even allowed to, like, take walks, like, only to go to the grocery store or, like, the pharmacy. Mm-hmm. And so I felt like once the lockdown ended, I had to, like, get used to, like, the new normal. Meeting, like, having to make new friends all over again. So I guess we decided to stay in Madrid because, at least for now, because, like, yeah, having to adjust and adapt twice, it was already a lot. And I'm, you know, I have my business, my Your Stellar Truth business, and, you know, trying to stay grounded, trying to, like, you know, build it and everything and run it effectively.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, there's a lot of distractions here, though, in Spain. There's so much to do. People love going out.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
Yeah, it's, you know, I'm not, I've always wanted to go to Spain. It's one of the places in the world I haven't been that I'd love to go. Like Europe in general never called to me a lot, but Spain always did. I think it's because I'm Mexican, and maybe I want to go see if we maybe could have put up more of a fight, or if we... You know, I'm going to be like, who are these? You listen, guys, what do you, I think we could have, I think we rolled over for this.
But I mean, yeah, the Spaniards are very like cuadrados, we say, like very like stuck, a little bit stubborn, like a little bit mm-hmm. stuck in their ways. So yeah. I could see like, yeah, why they, that's kind of, I was reading like a book, I forget what it was called, but that's kind of why they, lost against a lot of like the indigenous empires, because they were not flexible
yeah.
in the way they were colonizing. They wanted to just run it like as if it were Spain, but the terrain is different. The people are different. Like, So,
well, yeah, when you show up and they're cutting people's heads off and throwing them down pyramid stairs, it's a different world. I really have. I've always wanted to go to Spain. What is, like, if you were to go to Spain, as someone who's lived there a while now, what do you suggest for someone who's there that wants to see the best parts of Spain, not like the touristy spots, you know? I like the real stuff. The history.
Yeah. Are you like a coast person, like a beach person, or you don't really care about that?
I do like the beach, but it doesn't have to be. I mean, I certainly like a good beach day, but.
Yeah. So there's this place. Well, first of all, definitely Granada. I don't know if you've heard of it. Mm-hmm. Parts of Spain, like not all of it, but parts of it were, conquered for like I think almost 1,000 years by one of the the caliphate, like the Islamic caliphate. Granada was like the last city to fall to be reconquered. They call it the La Reconquista, retaken by the Spaniards from the Muslims, the Arab Berber kind of like empire that they had over Spain. So so that city has the La Alhambra, which is like this huge, like is beautiful Islamic palace. It's so beautiful. It has beautiful gardens and grounds. And it's not too touristy, and it's in the south. So it's basically pretty warm most of the year. Doesn't get too cold. Like Madrid, where I am, does get cold in the winter.
What's
gets
cold? Like, you what know, are we talking? Yeah.
Like 40s, 30s.
Okay. That's colder than I want it to be. I mean, I moved to Texas for a reason.
But it gets colder than Texas, than most of Texas, I think. But I would recommend Granada. And also, like, on the coastal side, I really like... So Barcelona is very touristy and very cliche.
Yeah.
But, like, if you go like north, there's the Costa Brava, and it's a bit posh, like, but there's such beautiful beach towns all along that coast. My favorite one is called Cadaqués. It's near France, and it's where Salvador Dali, the artist, where he was from. So there's this little house dedicated to his work, and it's got like a very nautical feel, and it's like very, you could really only get there by car, so there's not a lot of tourists. I would recommend those two places. Those were like my favorite places I've ever visited in Spain, honestly. And also San Sebastian in the north, the Basque country, is really, really, really nice as well. But yeah, there's a lot to see. But if you're looking for like hidden gems, I would say those three places are like really like worth a visit.
I you know, normally I wouldn't want to be near that close to France, but you did sell me with the Salvador Dali thing. I'm a big Salvador Dali fan. That would be the place to go. So especially if they've got any of his art exhibits or anything like that over there. So I've got like three of his pieces in my room over here, actually. So,
yeah,
not originals, so cool. Of course, but, you know, prints of, I just love his, I love his work. So,
yeah, no, they have like a little, it's called Casa Dalí, and it's like, it's a bunch of his work and it's a house. So it feels really like, imagine a house just full of that artwork. It's awesome.
Yeah.
It's really awesome.
Just feel like you're on acid all the time.
yeah.
Yeah. Well, the good news, how do they know when they need to repair the house? You know, they're like, no, that's just the art. It's just the melting house.
I know. Like,
do we need to repaint this, or is this just part of the aesthetic at this point? What was the learning curve like moving from New York to Spain? I mean, New York's a pretty multicultural city, obviously. It sounds like you come from a multicultural background, language-wise and family-wise also. But were you pretty well-traveled before that, or was it kind of just dive in and see what happens?
Yeah, I mean, like, I had traveled, you know, both, like, with family and on my own, with friends, solo. I mean, I'm not one of those people that's like seen every country. Yeah. Just, you know, economically, it hasn't been possible for me.
Well, I got to tell you, Izzy, I got to tell you, there's some not worth seeing. You know,
yeah, there's, I would agree. I would so agree.
There's some on the skip list.
I feel like most places I've visited, I've liked.
No, and that is true.
Most of them.
You know, I'm just going to say there's probably a couple places that more so even as a woman are probably less advantageous to see. You know, you just... you know, they're not as kind to, you know, not as welcoming to the other.
Or too welcoming.
Yeah. Well, you know, welcoming is a nice way to say it. so yeah. So there's definitely some worth skipping, but yeah, no, most countries are, it's, you know, I spent a lot of time in Central and South America, and it's like, even some of the places people wouldn't think of are just really just, you know, if you're a little more open as a traveler, don't need a bougie, you can really have some great, interesting engagements, you know, and see some beautiful stuff.
Yeah, like I had, you know, I had been to like Mexico, like Costa Rica, like a bunch of places in Europe, obviously Italy, like Canada, some places, Morocco. I had studied in Morocco, and that's how I went to Spain, because you could take a boat from the north of Morocco to Spain.
Yeah.
That was the first time I went to Spain. So I had traveled, and I don't think the adjustment really had anything to do with me, like, having traveled or not. I think what was hard is, like, the language has not been hard, even in the beginning. Like, I feel like I've, you know, I picked it up really quickly because I already came with a decent level of Spanish. But I guess what's been hard is, like, yeah, like, Europe just has a lot of bureaucracy. Mm. And it's really, really difficult to navigate, and it requires a lot of patience. And like, yeah, like the housing market is in a really bad spot right now. So I guess like every time I had looked for like an apartment or something, or if I had to move and look for a new apartment, that was always like very, 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 very stressful to deal with.
Yeah.
Like incredibly like panic attack stressful.
So were you on like a work visa or travel visa? How was your travel? How was it working with you being there?
So I'm really lucky because I have an Italian passport because my mom was born there.
Oh.
So I could live in any European Union country.
Got it.
That's why, like I said, I couldn't live in the UK because they were leaving the EU. So for me, for UK, I would need a visa.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, living in the UK these days, you got to watch your P's and Q's a little more.
I had no interest in living there, honestly. I mean, I love London, but like, I was like, it's really expensive, and I don't know.
Well, you tweet the wrong thing. They're hauling people to jail for tweeting the wrong thing now. So I feel like that's a dangerous precedent. There's that whole freedom thing that's nice. You want to find a country that is a little
more open. I think Spain is a little better. I wouldn't say much better, but a little better.
Oh, really? So you can travel and you can live there without any type of, there's no documentation, there's no foreign, no nothing. It's just you have a Italian passport, so anywhere in the you're considered an Italian citizen, so anywhere in the EU you can live.
Yeah, like all I had to do was get like my national number.
Okay.
My national ID number, which is called the NIE.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's like Numero Identidad de Español or something. And so I just had to just get that number, and I just got it with the passport, and I just had to prove that I had an address. But sometimes it's hard because sometimes without the NIE they won't rent to you.
Oh yeah.
So it was a little like in the beginning I was like, well, what am I supposed to do? Like, do I get an apartment first? Do I get the NIE first? So yeah. I got the NIE first though, and then the apartment. So it worked out. But yes, with the bureaucracy, it depends who you get on a given day.
Mm-hmm.
Like they could just want to, you know, what's the saying? Yeah. Like push your buttons. I don't know. They could just want to bother you and be difficult and be like, add some arbitrary rule that you didn't know existed. So, the biggest adjustment has really been like dealing with the housing and the bureaucracy and the people. I mean, I've made a lot of friends here, and Spanish people, like, they have a really funny humor, and I do like them, but their way of being is really different from New Yorkers. Like, sure, it's just really different.
Yeah.
It's just very different. And I feel it's definitely like the classism is really like big here. And I don't know. It's just that shocked me because, you know, Europe has more like whatever social services and all of that than the US. So you would think they'd be a bit more like aware of certain things, but it's like, there's a huge kind of class divide, I guess you could say. At least in Madrid, it's pretty like intense.
Does it feel like you're treated like a foreigner? Or do you feel like you're treated like a citizen? Is there some obvious like, oh, this person is not from here? And I don't mean necessarily always as like a pejorative, like you're treated poorly or like a second class citizen. But I mean, you know, just different. You know, that like you would you are a guest in a sense. Does that make sense?
I feel like with me, I guess because of like the way I look, that doesn't really happen.
Sure.
Because I kind of could pass for someone from here. Sure. Like if you see like women from here, like there's definitely a lot that kind of resemble me.
Yeah.
Like just dark hair and white skin. And
yeah, that kind
brown
of,
eyes.
Yes, part of.
Yeah, like not super pale, you know, like, but I would say it depends on the person. It depends on who you encounter. I think certainly with like older people, like 60s and up, 50s and up, like people who are significantly older than me, I would say yes, more, you get more of that. But with like people who are in their 30s, 20s, or like even 40s, I would say that doesn't tend to happen. They tend to be very welcoming with me. Now, my partner is, he's Venezuelan, and he's like visibly not Spanish.
Sure.
And he has a lot of Spanish friends, and he's very like well integrated with his friends. But like when we talk about on a societal level, like sometimes people treat him very, very badly.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know,
and we're not the types who like, I don't know. We're not like, oh, like I've had friends who like, they live here and they don't like Spanish people and they won't associate with them because they think that they're all racist and this and that. And I'm like, my partner and I, like my fiance and I are not like that. Like we're pretty like laid back. Like we're pretty like, okay, well this person's just not a nice person and this person's a good person, but he has experienced like a lot of racism and like not being accepted.
I don't doubt that at all. I mean, you know, not to put a sweeping statement on this Spain, but I'm about to, and I don't mean this to all Spanish people, but in general, Spain is, as a country, is kind of notorious for being pretty fucking racist. You know, they're the country that during like the World Cup was, they're playing like some African country and we're like throwing bananas on the field and things like that. I mean, it's pretty crazy. It is one of the things that I think, here in, not, this is not by any means to sidestep or make excuses for any type of racism or bigotry, but oftentimes America is painted as this extremely racist and intolerant country, and when really America is one of the only melting pot countries where there truly is some integration, you know, because when you go to a place like Spain, they, you know, they're, and I'm sure, you know, there's younger people, more progressive, it's changing, but there's definitely a very racist culture. I mean, my family is from Mexico, and I have uncles that were born and raised in Mexico that like have a deep disdain for people from like Guatemala and Ecuador, you know, and it's like, it's so funny because I'm like, and here's the thing. And if you take those people and bring them to America, first of all, a typical American wouldn't even be able to tell the difference between a Guatemalan and a Mexican.
I know, they think it's all Mexico.
Yeah, yeah. So, so like but it's like, you know, so it just travels, right? You know, it's just, it's like, and it's one of those things where it's, I always say, like, just look at our Olympic team. Like, you look at any of our Olympic teams and it's multicultural. You look at, like, the Chinese, Olympic the swimming team or whatever, it's just going to be all Chinese people. Like, there's no integration of other societies, right? So, yeah, it's just interesting to hear that from someone living in Spain that it does. And with a, you know, yeah, as soon as you said I assumed he was Spanish, he was from Spain. As soon as you said Venezuela,
no,
I'm like,
he's not.
I'm like,
he has, like, the citizenship. He acquired citizenship, which is really good because when you apply for jobs or housing and they see you're not a citizen, good luck.
Right.
Good luck. That's all I'm going to say. Good luck. But I have to say, like, in the last, like, since I got here, I think there has been more immigration. A lot more people are coming. The president here, Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez, he's
strong
been
name.
Very, very, like, open with immigration, but, mm-hmm. like 61% of the people disapprove of the population disapprove of him and the immigration. So that's like kind of the answer to what you're saying. Yeah. Like it's pretty racist. Not everyone, but it's also, you have to think these countries like Italy and Spain, they, the median age is very old because the birth rate is really low and the life expectancy is really high.
Yeah.
So, it becomes kind of a problem because you have a country run by very old people who, like, for example, to be an entrepreneur here is really difficult because as a self-employed person, you have to pay much higher taxes than a regular employee.
Oh,
like
really?
much higher taxes.
Huh.
And the people running the country tend to be like much older and they're just out of touch and they've only ever worked for the government and, like, you know, government positions. So they don't understand, like, the young people that we want to innovate, that we want to do new things. So the country, these countries, Spain and Italy, are really having a lot of problems because of this. The median age is so high and it's just run. It's everything is in the benefit of the older population.
Right. Well, Italy,
so, like, Italy. The pensions are higher than a lot of the salaries.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
it's
which just isn't
insane.
Sustainable, you know, isn't sustainable long term. Yeah. Well, if it makes you feel any better, you know, again, you've been out of America for a while. It's all old people running America still, too, that are out of touch. So
it's crazy because America has the U.S. has a younger demographic. I don't understand how that happened. But here, there's a reason for it. But there, I'm like,
yeah,
oh boy,
yeah. I like really have been. I'm very vocal. I'm like, we need to have like a, you know, there's a minimum age to run for president. I think there should be a maximum age. And I mean, for me, the cap is like 60. After that, you
or
know,
or just like the term limits, like Mitch McConnell,
well,
Nancy Pelosi.
Yeah.
they've been there since I could, like, since I was a kid. I feel
right,
and well, I'm turning 32, so their time's up, I think.
Yeah.
Like they need to step down and give it to someone else, in my opinion.
100%. Yeah, they just don't. They're out of touch. They're bought and paid for. They have no idea what is actually, you know, real Americans, you know, people who are actually like living the American life, you know. That's personally why I like state senators for like your state congressional or state senators instead of like national senators, you know, like our state Congress in Texas and things like that, because those representatives make like $7,200 a year, right? They haven't have a real job. And those people are actually, so they're normal people who are affected.
$7,200 or $72,000?
$7,200 a year. So
for
your state, for like your state Senate, not like the U.S. Senate. So your state senators.
Okay, okay.
So those people, because it's a part-time job, you know, and they're only in session making, passing state laws, legislature, only a couple, you know, I don't know how many, I think it's only like 72 days a year or some crazy, some, not a lot, right? But those people are normal people who still have to have a job and are actually affected by the laws they pass, you know, whereas
right.
the people, you know, Nancy Pelosi, she's not affected by anything she votes up or down. It doesn't, you know, she's like above all that now. Any of those people who've been in Congress or Senate that long are. So, yeah, I 100% agree with you. It's get, you know, I would say 8 years max and then you got to.
Yeah, like, I understand you need some time to make, like, to affect change, but not, like, 30 years. Like, it's like, come on.
Yeah, not in perpetuity. not for, you know, just forever. Yeah, and the funny thing is you look at any of the districts or areas those people represent, and you're like, is that area doing any better than it was when you started?
Probably not.
So, maybe you could help those people who live there find a spot that's better for them. So, Izzy, I want to talk about what you do. Because, like, so I'll be honest with you. Normally, this type of thing borders on something that isn't, like, in my wheelhouse for what I generally want to put on this show. Take that in the spirit it's intended, not because of anything other than it's just not really in my wheelhouse. But the astrocartography thing, that is a mouthful. got me very interested in, like, what I want to know more about that. Give us people, like, an elevator pitch on what you do, and then we'll break it down a little more.
Okay, so basically what I do as an astrologer and astrocartographer, first of all, like, I know how to read birth charts, like the general astrology, but the astrocartography is, I guess, a bit more niche. What it is it's a sect of like astrology, like a sub-discipline of astrology that was developed in the 70s by a man named Jim Lewis from the U.S., and he found that it is possible to map your birth chart against a map of the world, and that when you relocate, your birth chart relocates with you. And while your original birth chart, which, you know, represents your personality, your instincts, your kind of way of being, your experiences, while that, you know, is always going to be your birth chart, the relocated chart represents more the experiences that you would be most likely to have in that location, the type of vibe that you would feel, the energies that you would encounter there, and just basically how different situations can play out when you relocate from one place to another based on your relocated chart.
Can I interject real quick and ask a quick clarifying question for definitely not for me, only for listeners, because I definitely know this part. Can you quantify a birth chart?
So, okay, like a birth chart. So you, in order to know your birth chart, you need to know your date of birth exactly and your exact time of birth and the location of birth. And you could put it in a calculator. There's different ones online that are free. And the way it works is that a birth chart has 12 houses, and each house represents a different area of life. And then you also have the planets, which fall in different signs and fall in different houses. And so different planets will rule different parts of your character and personality. So, for example, you know, your sun sign, that's like the most cliche astrology thing. Like, your sun sign is your identity, and your, like, baseline personality. Your moon is your moon sign represents your, like, emotional needs. Your Mercury sign represents the way that you think and communicate, and so on and so forth. And so when those planets in those signs are in a house, they kind of activate that area of life and bring the themes of those planets and those signs into that area of life. So, for example, let's say we have Venus, which tends to bring, like ease in getting what we want, and like more relaxation and like kind of attraction more effortlessly in the 10th house of career, for example. If we see someone with Venus in the 10th house for career, their career life could be expected to go more easily than someone who, say, has Saturn in the 10th house, which brings more restriction and burdens and obstacles. And this is not to say that someone with Venus in the 10th house is going to be more successful than someone with Saturn in the 10th house, it just, their experiences, their paths are going to be different. And they're going to have to navigate those energies.
Okay, do you,
if that makes sense.
I hear the phrase like Mercury is in retrograde, so as like a justification yeah. of shitty behavior a lot of the times. And I'm always like, maybe Mercury isn't in retrograde and you're just an asshole. I want, that's usually like, it's you know, that seems like a, like this blanket excuse I hear a lot for things. Is this, is there any validity to this?
Okay, so like, when Mercury's in retrograde, okay, so first of all, I practice evolutionary astrology. So we believe that you do have free will. You know, like just because you have a bad placement in your chart or quote unquote bad, or just because Mercury's in retrograde doesn't mean that you could behave badly and be a jerk.
Yeah.
But when Mercury's in retrograde, what tends to happen is, because Mercury rules communication and thinking and the mind, when it's moving backwards, like the theory is that like we're being affected by it moving backwards. So like communication, like there's more miscommunication. There might be more like technical errors because we're not thinking as straight. So they recommend like not to sign major contracts during a Mercury retrograde, for example, mm-hmm. or not, you know, maybe not taking on like a new job and signing on that during Mercury retrograde, because like there might be some kind of issue with it, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So, and like communication could feel foggier, like technology could be failing more, and just the overall vibe feels weird. And I feel it. Like sometimes I haven't even known that it's Mercury in retrograde, and I'm like feeling that it's like that, and then I check and it is Mercury retrograde.
Interesting. Yeah. See, this, my whole introduction to this is, I was years ago, a girl I dated was super into astrology, and I am a Libra, and she was super interested in that. And she was mad at me because her dad was also a Libra, and she didn't like her dad. And she's like, oh my God, you and my dad born in the same month. What are the odds, you know? And I was just like, 1 in 12, well, I think, is, you know, I don't know.
I think that's the mistake a lot of people make, because they don't know, like maybe they don't fully understand astrology, like because your sun sign is only one part of your chart. Like you have your sun sign, you mm-hmm. have your moon sign, you have your Mercury sign, you have your Venus sign, your Mars sign. Like Venus shows how you like approach relationships with others. Mars shows how you take action when threatened or confronted. Mercury shows the way that you think and communicate and process information.
So
you might be a Libra sun, but maybe your moon is in, I don't know, Cancer, and your Mercury is in Scorpio. And so that could maybe not make you super like Libra. But then I know some Libras who have like Libra sun, Libra moon, Libra Venus, Libra Mars, and they're like very like heavy Libra energy.
That's me. I've done this before with someone. They charted that out, and I'm almost exclusively Libra across the board. I'm like through and through. There's a couple other things that leak in there, but it's mostly almost all Libra.
Wow. Yeah, that's like me. I have a lot of Scorpio in my chart, and we have a horrible reputation as a sign. Scorpio and Gemini. A lot of people don't like Scorpios and Geminis.
Yeah,
and like,
yeah. I'm going to, this is going to sound
like,
weird.
No, I'm like, you guys could stay hating. I don't care.
Scorpio is, you're born December?
November.
Late November, right? November into December?
No. It's like October, I think, 23rd until November 22nd, like around there.
What's December?
Sagittarius.
That's what
And Capricorn is more in it towards the end.
Oh, yeah. Scorpio. Yeah. Scorpio is right after Libra. That's right. Okay.
It's right after Libra. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Now I was thinking Sagittarius is the one that... bad news for me. I am almost exclusively a Libra through and through, and I feel like every time I read things about Libras, I am very much, it does fit me.
It resonates,
but it's always one of those things too. I'm like, is this resonating because like it feels good to feel seen or something, or is it legitimate? But it usually, you know, if you look up Like, how, if you're the professional, how would you quantify a Libra?
A Libra, I mean, like someone with, like, heavy Libra energy, you mean? Or just a Libra sun? Because a Libra sun, like I said, they could have other placements. But well, I guess, like, the sign Libra, I would say, like, stereotypically speaking, tends to, like, be a bit more conflict avoidant, more passive aggressive, very strategic, very diplomatic, socially oriented. I mean, you do have a podcast called The Social Hour, so
that okay.
I think that I just think that speaks for itself.
Yeah. You know? I mean, I do stand up comedy for a living, so that's you know.
Socially oriented, like Libra. Like, some people call it the mirror, like, because they're very much able, especially Libra moons. Like, I have moon in Libra. They're very much able to kind of feel out, like, the needs and kind of what the other person in a situation needs or what other people are looking for. And sometimes they receive criticism for trying to mold themselves to be what the other person wants them to be. That's like the more, like, unevolved, like, negative side of Libra. But, like, you know, the more positive side is that they tend to be, like, very considerate. They tend to be very, like, more, like, understanding. They have a lot of empathy because they're able to relate to the other person very well and see the other and put themselves in the other person's shoes.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, they don't, like, they tend to dislike conflict. They seek the what's that expression? I'm forgetting all the expressions in English. This is the problem. the path of the least resistance.
Hmm.
They choose the path. They're known for choosing the path of least resistance. They tend to, like, be very, like, especially the women, because it's ruled by Venus. Mm-hmm. Venus is the ruling planet of Libra, so they tend to be, like, into looks and appearance and beauty, fashion, all of those things. They have, like, a certain eye for the aesthetics.
Okay. Yeah. Some of that, a lot of that resonates. I would say that
the indecisiveness too. I forgot that they could be, you have to think it's the scales, and they're always think, like, trying to weigh, literally, like, weigh the options, and they could deliberate a lot.
Yeah, I like to think we're just meticulous and thorough.
Yeah.
So, I will say, it's funny you say you. That's you know, you said the empathy of, like, which I guess is one way to look at it. Another way to look at it is, like, I'm very often playing devil's advocate.
Because again, they could see, put themselves in the other person's shoes so easily.
Yeah. Well, I think part of it, if I'm gonna go on this journey of astrology with you, part of it is that, you know, we are very firm in our sense of justice and fairness, right? And, you know, in like law schools and ethics and debate, even, they tell you, you know, they teach you that you can't justify your own side unless you can defend the opposing side. So, meaning you have to be able to, like, steel man the opposing argument before you can actually really mentally be able to steel man your own. So I'm constantly, like, if I disagree with something or firmly agree with something, I always want to have, like, a thought experiment of what is that other side, what is the other view, and why do I feel this way, and what, you know, what would the other person say to me if we were having this conversation.
And sometimes, because I have my moon in Libra, and, like, you know, sometimes that could be a good thing, like, to have a nuanced mind. But, like, then I guess the Scorpio in me kicks in and is more with the black and white thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, that's a dilemma for me, because, like, sometimes I can see both sides, but then other times I'm like, no, this person is just blatantly wrong, or they're just blatantly a bad person, and I can't, and I'm choosing a side firmly and standing with it.
Yeah. You know, I mean, once I have a side, I'm steadfast, but I definitely like look at all angles of things. It's part of the reason that I think I'm like politically homeless. Like I'm not conservative. I'm not liberal. I'm somewhere in the middle. And I haven't voted for a major political party in, you know, a decade. And probably never will again in my life.
Yeah. I mean, I could kind of relate in the sense that, like, I don't know, like a lot, I don't want to say I'm not left or right, but I don't feel like, yeah, I feel like a lot of the people that are out there are just like not worth voting for.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and you know, I look at things and I can see things on from, you know, sometimes I look at one topic and I'm like, yeah, this makes more sense this way. And then I look at another topic that might be a talking point for the other side and be like, well, that makes a little more sense this way. So, yeah, but I definitely like to, you know, look at things from all sides and angles. So, but again, firm as kind of a stereotype, Libras love have like justice and fairness is kind of a big thing for us.
Yeah, as a Libra moon, I relate. Like, for me, if something is unfair, it, like, hits me to my core. Like, it hurts me. I, like, need to right the wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, right? You know? Yeah. So where do you – so you get someone's birth chart, and you start working on trying to figure out where they should go or what would be ideal for them. I mean, is there a general way to do it, or are you looking at, like, if they have a certain – if they're so, have yeah, a certain let me, goal they I'll want to accomplish it, or
yeah, I'll break it down. So basically when I work with clients, I give them an intake form, you know. And so that form has like several questions. It's obviously their birth info and their name and email, but it also has like it asks for, you know, what are they looking to attract into their life currently? What does their current situation look like? Where are they right now? Have any of the locations they've lived in either now or in the past been significant or relevant? Where are some locations they're considering relocating to? And if they have no freaking idea, then I have to do more work and more research. But yeah, I basically, based on that, I look at their chart. Most people book a combo. They book a chart reading with astrocartography. Because when I do the chart reading, I can really get a sense of like, who is this person?
Yeah.
And what are their needs? What are their goals? Who are they? What do they need? And so based on the chart, by looking at the chart, I could see what they need in a location and based on the chart and also based on just what they tell me in the intake form. And then, you know, I look into the relocated charts and the planetary lines, but the planetary lines are basically, it's the same thing. It's the more like popularized version of astrocartography. Like the planetary lines, basically all they are is when a planet, luminary or celestial body falls like close to a birth chart angle. The birth chart has four main angles and then 12 houses. That forms a planetary line. And that brings like a certain energy to that location. So I look at their lines. I look at like what lines would be best for them to live on based on what they're looking for. Then I look in the relocated chart to get more information about the places. And then, yeah, I work with them and I go through it with them and I go through my findings and, you know, which places I feel would be more supportive for what and why. And yeah.
Now, what? How long does this process take you?
About like 2 to 3 hours.
Okay.
It's long, but yeah. I like to be thorough. Okay. I like to be thorough. I really want the person, you know, the client to get like the best experience possible.
Is there like a Reader's Digest version where I tell you where I live now and when I was born and you can give me you can throw out some thoughts, or is it, you gotta break down the whole thing?
Oh, hold on 1 second. Okay. Sorry.
It's okay.
There's something for the house that we have to do.
Oh, and okay.
No, let me just tell them. I'm so sorry about
that's
that.
Okay. Houses are important.
No worries. Okay. So, what were we saying? So, yeah, what were you asking me? If I could do what?
I was just asking if there's like a Reader's Digest version of this where you can, like in a snapshot or, you know, where you can, brief information can tell you things, or you need to really break down this whole chart. The more the information, the more thorough, I assume, but.
I do offer like, you know, mini sessions where I like maybe will look into less locations. But it's really better to just be as thorough as possible, because this is like a big decision. These are, you know, this is relocation.
Yeah.
You know, this is a big deal. So I don't want people to be guided the wrong way, or just more so given like not enough information.
Yeah.
You know, like yeah. I wouldn't want them to be in a predicament where they're choosing their location and they don't have enough information and guidance.
Yeah.
You know,
does it ever tell you something? You're like, oh, this says you're supposed to be in Turkmenistan, or you're like, ugh, you know.
I mean, like, I don't think like, I never tell a person like, okay, you're supposed to be here, but like, I look at different locations and I could gauge and see that, okay, this place could be really good for your career, or this place could be really good for romance, or this place could be really good for both. Mm. This place could be really good for like a spiritual retreat, or like relaxation, or just like kind of like a little escape. Like different places could be really good for different motives.
Sure.
And it's very difficult to find a quote unquote perfect place, but you could find like a better place than where you're living now. And right now I'm getting a lot of clients from the US because they're really scared about, you know, the political situation and things like that. So, they're like, okay, I want to find the best place for me in Europe or in South America, you know, like, so I'll find them the best place in that like part of the world.
Okay. So
that I can find for them. So it's not like, okay, you belong here. No, yeah.
It's not the whole globe where you're like, they're like, Tallahassee, are you sure? You know, like,
Sometimes like it's surprising. Like the other day I had this woman and she just was like, you know, I don't care. Like I'm open to anywhere. Like I have money or whatever. Like I could live wherever I want. And yeah. I was like, okay. So one of the places I found that looked really good for her, like energetically, was Iran.
Wow.
And she was like, actually, you know, I've always been attracted to Iran. And I was like, really? And then she was like, yeah, I'm like half Iranian. And I was like, oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So,
hey.
You know, it depends. But I've had interesting ones where, you know, like I had this couple that they were interested in moving to Europe. And it's especially hard to do a couple's reading. It's especially hard to do a couples reading because it's like their two charts could be so different.
Yeah.
You know? And so I really, based on what they were looking for, I couldn't really find anywhere in Europe. And then we kind of settled on New York.
Hmm.
They were in Cali, and they're just energetically can't anymore with Cali. And I saw in their charts that it was not good anymore. And so I said, for them, I found that New York would be really good.
Hmm. Now, have you done this for your fiance?
Yeah, for my fiance, for my family, for friends, for myself.
Is Spain also a good, you know?
Spain, like, yeah. Spain is very good for him. I would say, like, from my findings, socially, it's really, really good. And for, like, feeling comfortable long term, it's very good. Career-wise, like, it seems like it's sort of taking time. Like, there's a placement that we both have in our relocated chart that's actually, like, the same. It seems like the career is a bit slower. It's, like, taking more time to, like, really thrive in our career. But it's, like, that placement we have in the relocated chart is, like, about, like, building a really good foundation and then going from there.
Okay.
So, like, requires a lot of patience. But, yeah, it's pretty good for the both of us, though, I must say.
So how many of your people who come to you, you know, feel like, do you get a lot of feedback afterwards of how these people are progressing in new locations and what, you know, if it's working out?
Yes, I do. And for the, like, honestly, like, for the most part, like, very few of them, like, the people that I've moved with, sorry, that I've worked with, like, none of them have really said anything that, like, negative about where they've moved. It's always been more, like, logistical stuff. Mm. Like, oh, like, I didn't know that in Portugal the health insurance was so expensive. Like, they'll write to me like that. They'll be like, oh, my God, I'm loving whatever country. It's going really well. But then, like, a few people will be like, you know, but I didn't know that the health insurance would be so expensive. And I always say, you know, there are relocation specialists that people can work with who do help with the visa stuff, the health insurance, all of that. And I always recommend, you know, that they look into that as well. I'm kind of trying to pivot my business from, like, also to also including relocating, like, relocation counseling. Mm-hmm. Cause I know how to do all that. It's just, like, that would be a lot of work on top of what I already do.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, and then some people that I've worked with, like, they just haven't made the move yet. You know, they're not ready. They don't feel ready, or like they're just not ready for whatever reason. But the people that I've worked with, like, that have made the move, like, have said, have all been very happy. The only thing is that they were like, oh, like the health insurance or certain, like, logistical things were stressful. I feel like when you move abroad, it's always something.
Sure. Yeah. There's going to be a learning curve. There's going to be stuff that's unexpected, you know, it's different, but, how much of what of these people are experiencing do you think could be chalked up to, like, placebo effect? And what I mean is, like, if someone is coming to you, they mm-hmm. probably have the idea that they want to be somewhere else anyway, right? So it means they're probably unhappy where they are at the moment. So, you know, going somewhere new can be exciting enough as it is. Do you think there's some if any percentage of it, you know, not to discredit you're doing. I'm just asking, you know, because I mean, there is, like, a, you know, you go somewhere new and you're like, oh, look, I, you know, life's better because I moved, you know?
Well, here's the thing. Like I said, I ask my clients also, where have you lived before now?
Okay.
All right. And so, for example, I had two clients. No, more than two, maybe three or four, that all lived on a very difficult planetary line. They lived on their Pluto IC line. Pluto tends to bring loss, transformation, even death. And the IC is the home, like the literal home. That's the angle of the home.
Well, yeah, Pluto can't even decide if it's a planet. It's transforming every other week.
Yeah, I know. And so it's small but mighty, you know, it's a small planet or not even a planet anymore, but whatever.
Yeah, it comes and goes.
All of those people, like, you know, be it that they lost their home in a fire, that they experienced major family deaths, mm-hmm. that they married and got divorced multiple times in that location on that line. And this is telling me about, like, this is before they told me anything about what happened to them there. They just said, for example, oh, I used to live in Los Angeles, or I used to live in Cape Town, South Africa, for example. Like, and I look at their relocated chart and I've said, oh, like, I had this other client. I was like, okay, like, this, you lived in Germany before. I was like, I see that you must have been, like, you might have been very, very, very socially isolated and lonely. And she's like, that's exactly how I felt there. Mm. So I get what you're saying. And also in the beginning, there's always, when you move abroad, there's always the honeymoon phase.
Sure. Yeah. And yeah.
I recently worked with a woman who relocated from Thailand to Spain. And I felt like, you know, and I think she wanted to work with me because I live in Spain. So it made a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. And I felt like she was, like, her chart in Spain was good, like her astrocartography and stuff. But I really felt like talking to her, like, she was really romanticizing Spain. And I was like, you got to take off those rose colored glasses right now.
Yeah.
Because it was like Thailand bad, Spain good. And I was like, no, there's going to be different types of issues. There's going to be different types of issues in any country that is even apart from the energetic feeling. But I do really think that some places could on paper be super beautiful, super safe, super clean, super affordable, and you're not happy there.
Yeah.
Because energetically it just doesn't feel right.
Sure, sure.
And I've had that with clients where they're like, you know, I live in whatever city and I make really good money and I have a really good relationship and I have a good job and I'm safe and this and that, but I'm like over it. I don't feel anything here anymore. I don't, energetically it feels off.
Yeah. How much responsibility, if any, do you push onto the client also to maybe do some internal work also? Because, you know, a lot of times if someone's that unhappy and reaching out to someone like you, you know, they're probably have some level of unhappiness, or they're just not satisfied with what's happening in their life. And a lot of that too, not to say, again, I'm not discrediting what you're doing, but also, you know, you can put someone anywhere, but if they're not changing certain things that they feel or do, you know, their own internal kind of workings, they could be sabotaging the place that's best for them too, you know.
I always, like, when I, especially with the birth chart, reading included, I do tell clients very, very honestly, like, some of their tendencies and things they might need to work on and things that they might need to get a hold of before going abroad or before just moving. I mean, not everybody goes abroad. Like, I had a client a couple months ago who was relocating from, I think, Texas to North Carolina or something. It's not always it's not so black and white, right? So there's that aspect of like me kind of helping them do some work on themselves and helping them understand their tendencies and kind of their inclinations a bit better. But then also in astrology, we have something called transits. And transits are, they're sort of predictive. Like, you could kind of see the energies a person is experiencing at a given time and date. So even sometimes if you are in the right location, you might be going through a difficult transit and that could be affecting you no matter where you are.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I do, you know, remind clients, because I get really frustrated when people come to me. This is the most common thing. I think there is a huge loneliness epidemic.
Mm-hmm.
And people come to me and they're like, I want to find my husband. Like, it's like every other person, like they want to, and I'm like, I'm not a matchmaker. Like, yeah. I'm not like, I'm not a psychic. Like, I can tell you where the locations that show me good energy around romance and love. But like, you know, if you are afraid to go out and date and put yourself out there, doesn't matter where you are. If you stay home all day, you're not going to meet anybody.
Yeah.
You know, so I do remind them, because I have had people who, you know, they're giving me a little bit like hermit energy and they're like, oh, I'm so lonely. I want a husband or whatever. And I'm like, well, you have to get over that fear of going out with your friends and putting yourself out there first.
Yeah.
You
know? Well, and that's kind of what I mean, is that the people who are probably in the position where they're reaching out to get your expertise, and if they're like, you know, some, like this woman who's like, I want to find my husband, you know, it seems like one of the first things those people probably need to hear is, it sounds like you need to find yourself. And then, you know, because like, we can move you to the right spot, but like, you know, you can find them the best spot to set them up for success for that, but they also still have to be willing and able to accept it or see it and
bring, you know. A place could be good for a period of time, but maybe not forever, because maybe a place was super great for a career, but now they want to retire and just chill.
Yeah.
You know, like we go through different phases in life. I don't think we're really necessarily meant to live in the same place forever and ever.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, well, you know, it's certainly with the world open these days, we can go a lot of places. So have you ever charted anyone and been like, you are exactly where you're supposed to be?
Yes. It's rare, but yes, twice. And you know where they both were?
Where?
New York. New York.
Interesting.
My city. Oh, New York. I love New York so much. I know a lot of people in the U.S. hate it, but, it's their problem.
I've still never been.
What?
No, never been. Never been.
No. Yeah. You can't tell me that.
Yeah.
I get so mad when people tell me that in the U.S. they've told me they've never been there. Oh, no, you have to
know. Yeah, you know, here's the thing. It's like I there was a time that I had more of a desire to go when I was younger and did nightlife and things like that and city life. I don't really do that much anymore. I mean, it would be interesting to see it at some point.
Yeah, but for your comedy, like, could be a good place.
Yeah,
but although, like, the Northeast humor is, I think, maybe different. I don't know.
It's not even that so much as, like, I performed in the East Coast, like a lot through Pennsylvania and up into the Carolinas and Delaware and, you know, Maine. And I mean, I've been just never in New York. And when I was younger, I probably would have wanted to more. Now it's kind of like, because now here's the thing. Now when I have time off and want to go do something, I'm going to the jungle in Costa Rica or Belize or Peru, you know, or Panama, and just want to be like, I don't want to see people and technology and cities.
New York also has like really beautiful nature. Like I went to New Paltz in the Hudson Valley. It's really, and there's the Catskills, the Adirondacks. It's really beautiful.
Yeah. And I believe that too. But I also, you know, lived in the Pacific Northwest for quite a while, and I don't think you're going to beat the Pacific Northwest when it comes to mountains and outdoors and hiking.
It's different. I think it's different.
It is different. Yeah. I mean, again, I don't want to disparage New York. I just feel like I've gotten past the point where there's an itch there. And when I have time to go do stuff,
yeah, like if life brings you there, for now.
Yeah,
yeah, I understand. I feel that way about like a lot of places, honestly.
Yeah, because I mean, I grew up in L.A. and I was, obviously L.A. and New York are different cities, but I've done big city life, and that's not what I love anymore. So big busy metropolises are not really what I'm, you know, my go-to anymore.
Yeah, so. I get it. They could be overwhelming, stressful. New York is also so expensive. Like, it is crazy. It's gone too far.
Yeah. Well, I just don't, like, I don't drink anymore. I'm not like if I go out, the only thing that I do if I go out at night is because I'm performing comedy. Maybe I go watch comedy, but I rarely do that anymore just because I live, eat, and breathe it as a career. So it's like, I don't, you know, it's like nightlife, and it's just not, you know, like I got a little mini farm here in Texas with chickens and a bunch of dogs and grow my own food. And like, that's more my speed these days.
Yeah, I understand. I get it.
Well, Izzy, you said you had a promo code for your products for listeners.
Yes. 20% off of any order from my website.
Okay.
You know, that includes like the chart readings, the astrocartography readings. I have an ebook, the code is in caps, stellar. And then 2025.
Okay. And we'll put that in the show notes. Couple last questions. First of all, how easy would it be for you to steal an identity, given that people have to tell you their date of birth, where they were born? I feel like what's your mother's maiden name and your first dog's name? Okay, no, I need that for the.
No. I mean, like, look, I can't calculate the charts without it. It's just impossible.
Sure. Oh. That's what you said. That's what they, yeah, that's how I got scammed by Nigerian prince, too.
I know, too. Especially Americans, like, there's with the data stuff, they're so, like, when your boomer aunt puts, like, oh, I do not consent my information on Facebook. I'm like, yes, Mark Zuckerberg is going to see your post today. Yeah.
Good thing you tagged him. He's definitely going to come read this.
It's so funny. I swear that always makes me laugh when I think about that. Because I have a cousin who does that all the time. And I'm like, you need to stop. They don't care.
Right. Yeah, it's like you already clicked consent when you signed up for this, buddy. I don't know how to tell you this.
Yeah, and it's like a huge thing. And you, they own your stuff.
Yeah,
like your data. Literally own it.
Well, you know, I mean, there's a great documentary a couple years ago. I'm going to forget the name of it, but it was about social media and things like that. And essentially saying that, you know, if the product is free, it means that you're the product, meaning like, you know, Facebook's free because our data is the product. They want our information. They want our data. That's what's, you know, that's why they give this little app to keep us busy on, because everything, all the information we give them is so valuable.
Yeah, they should be paying us, honestly. They should be paying us. I mean, the jobs are disappearing because of AI. Like, the least they could do is pay us for our data that's making them, like, billions of dollars.
Oh, my God, I know. It's crazy.
It really bothers me. Like, I'm like, okay, you could take my information. Like, I don't care, but, like, pay me.
Really,
like, I don't know. Like $20 a question. I don't know.
Yeah. Don't let Peter Thiel hear you say that. That guy will be putting you in a cybernetic prison and putting your mind into some AI cyborg soon. If he's like, oh, you consent to that? Perfect. Izzy's trapped in the Matrix forever.
Dear God. Oh, so, disgusting.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. So, okay, last question. I had Panda Express last night for dinner. How much stock should I put into the fortune cookie that I got with it? Because it seemed pretty accurate.
Well, what did it say?
It said Monday is going to be a good day. So far, it's been okay. No disrespect to you. It's just I'm just very tired.
maybe you just need to get a birth chart reading.
Maybe I need
and a transit reading.
Yeah,
and then I'll tell you what to do.
Okay. All right. 20% off with Stellar 2025 caps.
All in capitals. Because my website, my company is called Your Stellar Truth Astrology.
Okay.
So that's why I just put Stellar. Pretty easy.
Perfect. Yeah. Well, Izzy, tell people where they can find you, besides the website, any other social media name. You said you got an ebook, all that. Give your plugs before we get out of here.
Yeah, so I have a Substack. I'll share the link with you to put it in the thing, because Substack has like a million things. It's annoying. I have a Substack. It's called Practical Astrology. I also have an Instagram. It's called Your Stellar Truth. I'm on TikTok as well under the handle Your Stellar Truth. And my website is www.yourstellartruthastrology.com.
Okay.
So you can find me on all those platforms, and I will be making a YouTube very soon as well, because I'm over TikTok. It's too addictive.
Yeah, I never got on it.
I mean, it's great, but like, just don't. It's just too addictive. I think it's so addictive. Yeah.
Yeah. I do stand up comedy, and then I have a comic book project I do, and everyone for both of them was always like, yeah, I get on TikTok. And I'm like, I'm not jumping on it.
I can't deal with it. Yeah.
I can barely deal with Facebook and Instagram. I'm not doing another one. So, I don't blame you for wanting to get off it. So, All right, well, guys, we are going to get out of here for this week. Go check out Izzy's website. Use Stellar 2025, all in caps, for 20% off any products. Find out where you could fall in love, get better work, or find just a better place to live. Or just in general, some information on how you can, you know, feel a little better in your day-to-day life. So check out the book, check out the coming YouTube, all the stuff, follow her, and there you go. Anything else before we get out of here?
No, thank you so much for having me. This was great. I loved it. It felt so like a really nice conversation getting to know
everything. Yeah, well, thanks for coming on. I appreciate yeah, just I always tell people, I'm like, literally I have done almost 500 episodes of this show and I do like zero prep. I just want to go on.
I love it.
Yeah.
It's natural.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I don't want it to feel like a quiz. I want it to feel like we're just talking.
And one more thing. Sorry. My astrologer best friend and I are going to launch a podcast in November.
Okay.
So stay tuned for that as well. I'll be making announcements for that. I am moving. I'm relocating to a new apartment. So that's why we're starting in November.
All right.
I'm a mess.
All right. Well,
life's a mess.
Hopefully that apartment's the right spot on your chart. So all right, Izzy. Well, thank you very much, guys. And again, as for me, go to Deese.comedy or DeeseComedy.com. Check out everything going on across the network. Live stand-up dates coming at you everywhere. Get your tickets. Deeese.comedy on Instagram and Inferno.earth for the comic book. Killstand number 3 is coming in the next couple weeks. So keep an eye on that page for the launch date. So if you haven't already pre-ordered your copy, you can get your copy and we can get it out to you ASAP. All right, that's it, guys. We're going to get out of here this week. Thanks again for the Social Hour. I've been Deese, and for Izzy, thank you very much, everyone. And we will see you all next week.